Julie Chan is living a mundane existence as a supermarket cashier when teenage girls recognize her as the identical twin of famous influencer Chloe Van Heusen. This chance encounter reopens wounds from their complicated past. Orphaned at four, the twins were separated, with Chloe adopted by wealthy New Yorkers while Julie lived with their aunt. Years later, Chloe orchestrated a viral reunion video that garnered millions of views, bought Julie a house, then disappeared from her life completely. Now, after years of estrangement, Julie receives a disturbing call from her twin, Chloe's voice, barely audible, apologizing and repeating the word mistake before the line goes dead. This chilling communication sets in motion a dark journey that will transform both sisters' lives forever. Julie Chan is Dead has become a cultural phenomenon since its 2023 release, with readers and critics alike captivated by its unflinching examination of social media's dark underbelly. TikTok creators have embraced the novel with viral videos recreating key scenes, while celebrities, including Taylor Swift and Lana Condor, have praised its twisted exploration of identity and fame. The book has spent 32 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, with Netflix already securing adaptation rights for what promises to be 2025's most anticipated psychological thriller. After Chloe's disturbing phone call, Julie becomes obsessed with reaching her twin. When repeated calls go unanswered and Julie discovers Chloe hasn't posted on social media in 2 weeks, unusual for someone who typically posts thrice weekly, her concern deepens. Desperate for answers, Julie takes matters into her own hands. She calls in sick to work, steals a sandwich, and boards a bus to New York. During the journey, memories flood back. Her mother's embroidered dresses and red lipstick, her father's cigarette smell and pressed polos, and Chloe, born 7 minutes earlier, who always led the way with her charming grin. One particular memory surfaces, being 3 years old when Chloe disappeared while they were home alone. Their mother frantically searched before finding Chloe naked in the garden, uprooting tomato plants. Julie remembers hiding in the bathroom cabinet afterward, feeling invisible, until Chloe found her and shared mango slices in their private sanctuary. Arriving at Chloe's luxury Manhattan apartment overlooking the Hudson River, Julie is mistaken for her sister by the security guard, Ramos, who mentions packages and asks if she's feeling better, giving Julie clues that something might be wrong. Maintaining the charade, Julie takes the elevator to the 27th floor, marveling at the contrast between their lives while feeling increasingly anxious. Inside the apartment, Julie explores. It's smaller than it appears in Chloe's videos, but still luxurious. She notices prescription Elavil medication and a strange smell. After searching the apartment and finding no one, Julie trips and discovers Chloe's body behind the kitchen island. Her twin is clearly dead. Blue skin, crusty spit, bloodshot eyes, and signs of distress. Overwhelmed with panic, Julie calls 911 after retrieving Chloe's phone, which unlocks with her identical face. The discovery of her sister's body marks the beginning of Julie's descent into a moral abyss. Rather than a moment of grief, it becomes the catalyst for a transformation that will blur the boundaries between identity, ambition, and madness. While waiting for emergency services, Julie can't resist snooping through Chloe's phone. What she discovers shatters any remaining sentimentality about her sister. Chloe's monthly income exceeds $100,000, with single sponsorships bringing in as much as $125,000. More devastatingly, emails reveal that Chloe deliberately exploited Julie's lower middle-class life for views and sponsorship money. The emotional reunion video that seemed like a genuine reconnection earned Chloe $57,000 from YouTube alone, plus another $125,000 from a single sponsorship. This revelation that she was merely a prop in Chloe's content strategy breaks Julie. But when paramedics arrive and a fan-struck police officer mistakes her for Chloe, Julie makes a life-changing decision. She confirms this false identity, fabricating a story about being away in the Hamptons while her troubled sister house sat. She even invents a history of addiction for Julie to explain the death. The ease with which Julie steps into her sister's life is both disturbing and understandable. Having lived in the shadow of her sister's success, constantly being mistaken for Chloe but never enjoying the privileges that came with her identity, Julie now sees an opportunity to claim what she believes she deserves. The moral implications barely register as she posts Chloe's crafted statement about her twin's death, announcing to the world that Julie Chan is dead while Chloe Van Heusen grieves. The statement describes discovering her twin's body, experiencing a breakdown, and feeling like a part of me died as well. It ends with platitudes about grief and healing. To Julie's satisfaction, everyone loves the post. She's flooded with supportive comments and messages as the apology post doubles Chloe's usual engagement. Entertainment sites praise her honesty about grief, and influencers clamor to offer support. The intoxication of this positive reinforcement creates a feedback loop that further distances Julie from moral considerations. Each like, each comment, each expression of sympathy becomes validation for her deception, blurring the line between performance and reality. Julie's new life as Chloe brings her into contact with the Belladonnas, an elite circle of influencers elevated to stardom by the mysterious and charismatic Bella Marie Melneberg, an ultra-famous model with 32 million followers. When Julie receives an invitation to Bella Marie's exclusive brand launch event, she's both thrilled and terrified. Despite the risk of attending so soon after her sister's death, Julie's fascination with Bella Marie and the knowledge that Chloe wouldn't have mourned her death propel her forward. At the event, Julie meets the inner circle, Angelique Gray, known for baking content inspired by her childhood starvation, Kelly Hart, a social media veteran with millions of followers, Lily Schmidt, a former child actress infamous for returning an adopted child with Down syndrome, and others. Their conversation revolves around how hard influencer life is compared to regular jobs, with Lily claiming service work is brainless after filming a McDonald's shift video, a stark contrast to Julie's actual experience as a cashier. The dinner becomes an elaborate production, with classical music featuring death-themed pieces, gaunt models wearing themed outfits matching each course, and blood-red rare venison that makes Julie increasingly uncomfortable while everyone else seems enchanted. The entire experience feels surreal, almost ritualistic, hinting at something darker beneath the surface of these perfect lives. Most significantly, Julie discovers she's seated next to Bella Marie herself, indicating Chloe and Bella were much closer than her research suggested. Bella Marie greets Julie with concerned blue eyes and calls her darling in an unplaceable European accent. Despite being in her 30s, she appears impossibly youthful with an almost holy aura. Throughout the evening, Julie learns of a mysterious annual Belladonna trip in June that's blocked on Chloe's calendar. When she asks about it, she's met with strange reactions. Fiona, Chloe's assistant, is surprised by the question, saying Chloe had previously threatened to literally kill her if she ever mentioned the trip again. This only increases Julie's curiosity about what happens on this secretive island getaway that the influencers never post about. The Belladonnas represent everything Julie has coveted: fame, wealth, influence, and most importantly, belonging. But as she's drawn deeper into their world, the glamorous facade begins to crack, revealing something far more sinister beneath. Julie receives an invitation to Bella Marie's exclusive annual island retreat, a coveted opportunity that marks her full acceptance into the Bellavana circle. Upon arrival at the private Caribbean island, all phones and technology are confiscated as part of a cleanse, cutting the influencers off from the outside world. The island itself is breathtaking, featuring volleyball and tennis courts, stables, a farm with animals, and an advanced greenhouse with climate-controlled sections growing produce from around the world. Each belladonna gets their own bungalow along the shore, a testament to Bella Marie's immense wealth. Julie's has a private garden with tropical plants, a mango tree, and a wooden plank reading Chloe at the entrance. While there's a padlock on the outside, there's no lock inside, an ominous detail that will later prove significant. The first night's dinner is an extravagant outdoor feast followed by s'mores by the bonfire. Bella Marie announces a cleansing ritual where each person writes down something they wish to leave behind and burns it in the fire. When Julie's paper flutters away from the flames, Bella Marie dramatically stops her from retrieving it, declaring she's been chosen. Under pressure, Julie admits she wrote aunt, fabricating that Julie's aunt has been threatening her, demanding money, and threatening to leak Julie's secrets. The group creates a nest of twigs, placing Julie's saliva-soaked paper inside wrapped in muslin. Everyone chants support as Bella Marie asks what Julie wants to happen to her aunt. Through tears, Julie confesses, "I want her to suffer like I have, to never bother me again." They collectively destroy the bundle before throwing the remains into the fire. In a frenzied, almost hallucinatory state, Julie sees her aunt's face in the flames, burning away, and feels a release, believing with certainty that her aunt won't bother her anymore. This ritual marks Julie's first exposure to the cult-like practices of the belladonnas. The combination of isolation, group pressure, and possibly drugged food and drink creates an environment where normal boundaries begin to dissolve. Julie finds herself participating in increasingly disturbing activities, including morning yoga sessions with mandatory affirmations and strange bonding exercises that feel more like indoctrination than friendship. The true horror of the belladonna cult reveals itself gradually. During a picnic lunch, tensions rise when Iz, another belladonna, confronts the group about social media inequality, triggering a hostile response that isolates her. Later, Julie encounters an elderly woman, Mrs. Melneberg, who approaches a cliff edge dangerously. When Julie calls out, the woman rushes toward her, desperately warning, "Leave before they get you too," before being restrained by staff. The situation deteriorates further when Julie discovers Victor, a Ken doll-like staff member, and Chloe had been intimate. During a campfire dinner, she learns Victor is the shared sexual partner of all the belladonnas, who tease her about chopping wood with him. After dessert and strange green drinks that make Julie feel euphoric, the group engages in increasingly bizarre behavior. The ultimate horror comes when Victor brings a box containing tiny pink newborn mice. Bella Marie reveals that their success comes from a deity called Eto, who has blessed them with influence and power. To swear fealty to Eto and become true family, they pass the mice between them, bestowing wishes upon them. Then comes the final ritual. They must absorb Eto by eating the mice alive. Though horrified, Julie forces herself to swallow hers whole, desperate to be accepted as family. Later that night, Julie is awakened by Angelique's piercing scream. She finds her on the floor, pale and bleeding heavily, suffering a miscarriage. When Julie insists they call emergency services, Bella Marie initially dismisses her, saying, "We are family." Only after Julie's persistent pleading does Bella Marie relent and call for help. The following day, Julie discovers Iz's bungalow padlocked. Breaking in with an axe, she finds Iz tied to the bed with Hermes scarves, her mouth taped shut. Iz explains she'd called her daughters after lunch, then saw everyone acting like coked-up zombies. Later, she heard Julie screaming and went to check, only to be tackled by two men. Julie realizes the belladonnas are far more dangerous than she imagined. Under cover of night, Julie and Iz execute their desperate plan, sneaking across the moonlit compound to raid the storage shed for lighter fluid. The air is thick with tension as Julie finally reveals her true intentions, not just creating a signal fire as discussed, but burning her bungalow with the sleeping belladonnas inside. Though Iz recoils in horror, her face pale in the darkness, Julie methodically explains why this is their only path to survival. These women, with their vast network and ruthless determination, would never allow them to simply walk away with their secrets. Julie's instructions to Iz are precise. Run to the main house, hide in the storage closet near the kitchen until she sees flames, then use the landline to call emergency services. The phone in the kitchen, she knows, is their only connection to the outside world. As Iz disappears into the shadows, Julie begins her grim task, her hands steady as she douses the bungalow's wooden walls with lighter fluid. Inside, Bella Marie lies awake, her keen nose detecting the chemical smell. Earlier, when Julie had offered her sleeping pills, she'd performed a perfect sleight of hand, appearing to swallow them while actually spitting them into her palm. Now, catching Julie in the act, she reveals herself with unnerving composure. Her confession about Chloe's murder comes out with chilling detachment. How they'd carefully selected a combination of drugs that would interact fatally with Chloe's antidepressants, timing it perfectly during their afternoon tea ritual. Chloe's threat to expose their operation to the New Yorker had sealed her fate. Bella Marie's casual tone while discussing murder reveals the true depths of the Belladonna's corruption. All except young Angelique had participated in the calculated elimination of Julie's sister. Something snaps in Julie. Years of grief, rage, and survival instinct converge in one explosive moment. She grabs the axe she'd hidden behind the door and attacks Bella Marie with savage force. The first strike hits her neck, and in a blur of violence that seems to last both seconds and hours, Julie completes the gruesome task of decapitation. Blood-soaked and trembling, but grimly determined, she proceeds with her original plan. The lighter fluid-soaked walls ignite easily, flames climbing rapidly up the wooden structure. Julie secures the door with a heavy padlock, ensuring none of the seven sleeping women inside can escape. As she crawls away through the underbrush, the crackling inferno behind her consumes both evidence and perpetrators. The aftermath unfolds over 2 weeks of medical treatment and legal proceedings. Julie finds herself in an American jail, her fate complicated by the island's location in international waters. During booking, she learns of Iz's betrayal. Her former ally revealed her true identity as Julie Chan to the authorities. The charges are severe. 8 counts of murder, 7 for the Belladonna's, and most painfully, 1 for Chloe. Julie maintains her innocence in her sister's death with fierce determination, though the evidence suggests otherwise. The truth about what really happened that night on Malneberg Island remains shrouded in smoke and shadows, much like the smoldering ruins of the bungalow. Shannon, a formidable defense attorney known for her $1,200 per hour rate and perfect record with high-profile cases, meticulously crafts Julie's defense strategy. She builds a compelling narrative around self-defense, leveraging physical evidence from the island, including samples of deadly nightshade in the garden, documentation of psychological manipulation techniques, and testimonies from former staff members who confirm the cult-like atmosphere. Shannon's preparation is exhaustive, coaching Julie through every possible scenario and teaching her to maintain composed vulnerability on the witness stand. 2 key witnesses emerge as cornerstones of the defense. Bella Marie's mother, herself a former captive, will testify about the psychological torture and manipulation she endured during her 15 years on the island. Iz, despite her initial reluctance, agrees to confirm the genuine danger they faced, describing in detail the increasingly erratic behavior of the Belladonna's and the mounting fear among those trapped on the island. In a calculated media offensive, Julie orchestrates Victor's appearance on Dateline NBC. Their carefully scripted narrative emphasizes the cult's sophisticated brainwashing techniques, including sleep deprivation, isolation, and sexual exploitation. Victor's testimony proves particularly powerful as he describes Julie as his savior, the only person who recognized his humanity beneath the layers of psychological conditioning. His tearful account of their escape resonates deeply with viewers, sparking a nationwide conversation about cult survivors and trauma. The social media response exceeds all expectations. Julie's story dominates every platform. Twitter threads dissecting the case gain millions of impressions. TikTok videos analyzing her body language go viral, and Reddit threads debate every detail of the investigation. Chloe's dormant social media accounts experience unprecedented growth, with her final posts being scrutinized for hidden meanings. Julie's Jewels, her newly branded supporters, create fan art, merchandise, and conspiracy theories supporting her innocence. Internet detectives uncover damning evidence about the Belladonna family's history. Connections to South American dictators, mysterious deaths of former business partners, and a pattern of financial devastation following their business ventures. Each revelation further validates Julie's narrative of escape from a dangerous criminal enterprise rather than a simple family dispute. Despite Shannon's explicit instructions to maintain social media silence, Julie makes the bold decision to live stream simultaneously across Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Twitter. The response is immediate and overwhelming. Hundreds of thousands of viewers tune in, sending virtual gifts and supportive messages faster than the screen can display them. Julie feels the same intoxicating rush of power she experienced during the island fire, her eyes gleaming as she faces the camera and makes her dramatic declaration. One thing needs to be made clear. I did not kill my twin sister. This pivotal moment encapsulates the novel's central mystery, the elusive nature of truth in an era of carefully curated narratives. Julie's performance raises profound questions about authenticity, manipulation, and self-deception. Has she genuinely convinced herself of her innocence, or is this another masterful manipulation? The author leaves readers to grapple with these questions, highlighting how modern media can blur the lines between reality and performance, truth and perception. At its core, Julie Chan is Dead is a scathing critique of influencer culture and the commodification of identity in the digital age. Through Julie's transformation from ordinary cashier to infamous social media personality, the novel explores how easily authenticity can be manufactured and how readily audiences consume it. The story particularly resonates in an era where authenticity itself has become a marketable commodity, where influencers carefully craft candid moments and strategically share vulnerable content to appear more relatable to their followers. The Belladonnas represent the extreme endpoint of this culture, women who have sacrificed everything, including their moral compass and eventually their lives, at the altar of fame. Their devotion to Ito, whether a real supernatural entity or simply a metaphor for the addictive power of social media validation, shows how the pursuit of influence can become a religion unto itself. The sisters' ritualistic posting schedules, obsessive content creation, and willingness to destroy relationships for the sake of engagement mirror the real-world behaviors of content creators who burn out chasing algorithmic success. Julie's journey from victim to perpetrator to media manipulator illustrates the slippery moral slope of identity theft and performance. Her initial justification, that Chloe exploited her first, gradually gives way to a more disturbing realization. She's good at being Chloe, perhaps even better than Chloe herself. The line between impersonation and authentic self begins to blur, raising questions about whether our online personas are ever truly us or merely performances tailored to audience expectations. This transformation is particularly evident in how Julie adopts not just Chloe's appearance and mannerisms, but her entire digital footprint, from her posting style to her interaction with followers. By the novel's end, Julie has mastered the art of media manipulation, turning even her murder trial into content that generates views and sympathy. She strategically releases evidence on social media, coordinates with fan accounts, and crafts a narrative that positions her as both victim and survivor. Her final declaration that she didn't kill her sister may be true in a literal sense, Bella Marie confessed to the murder, but in a deeper sense, Julie has indeed killed her sister by completely erasing and replacing her identity. The way she methodically dismantles Chloe's original following while building her own serves as a metaphor for digital identity theft in the modern age. In our world of carefully curated social media presences, where the boundary between authentic self-expression and calculated performance grows increasingly blurred, Julie Chan is Dead serves as a chilling reminder of fame's true cost, not just to those who achieve it, but to everyone caught in its destructive orbit. The novel forces readers to confront uncomfortable questions about their own online presence and the extent to which they perform versions of themselves for digital consumption. Through Julie's story, we see how the pursuit of viral fame can lead to a kind of digital cannibalism, where identities are consumed and repurposed in an endless cycle of content creation and engagement hunting.